This is the BBC.
Hello, I'm Kirsty Young. Thank you for downloading this podcast of Desert Island Discs from BBC Radio 4. For rights reasons, the music choices are shorter than in the radio broadcast. For more information about the programme, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4. My castaway this week is the boxer Nicola Adams, the first ever woman fighter to hold European, World, Commonwealth and Olympic titles. She has blazed her trail with a sunny disposition that belies the brutality she meets out in the ring. They call her the baby-faced assassin. Her perfect bone structure and symmetrical smile say as much about her skill as all those medals she keeps winning. She doesn't rush her work, and to watch her box is to witness a masterclass in clean, tidy technical fighting. Interesting, then, that as a child she learned chess long before she learned how to throw a punch. Within a year of walking through the doors of her local boxing club, she had won her first match. She says, "For me, it's always been about not getting hit. Even throughout London 2012, I never had a mark on me. I see boxing as a game of chess, where you are constantly drawing on your skills and tactics." So welcome, Nicola. With chess, I suppose there's never any risk that you're going to get carted out of the arena on a stretcher, however. Do you thrive on that threat of danger?
Yeah, I do. I guess it's just I like the tactical part. OK, you're trying to make your opponent make a mistake so you can capitalise on that mistake. And I like that every time I step in the ring, I never know what's going to happen. I love pressure. It just makes me perform 10 times better. It's almost like if you lose this fight, you'll die. And I like the pressure of, okay, right, it's all or nothing. Let's go out and do this and perform the best you have ever seen me perform in my life.
And you are ludicrously unmarked as I sit here opposite you. You have the most beautiful set of shining white teeth. You have even bones. You have a straight nose. There's not even a mark on your brow. Have you ever properly taken a hit?
Yeah, but I tend to not get hit very often. I don't like getting hit, so I'm really good defensively.
The first ever bout you won then, you were 13. It was in a working men's club in Leeds. What can you remember about that?
Oh, God, everything. Smoking wasn't banned then, so I remember feeling the back of my throat was actually on fire because of the smoke in the room. There was almost like a ring of smoke above the ring. But I also remember my family being there and how excited I was, and I was running around the whole club because I was only 13 at the time. I was really excited, and my coach is trying to get me to sit down and relax and conserve my energy, and I'm like peeping through the curtain trying to see what's going on. Yeah, I absolutely, absolutely loved it.
And were the spectators, the guys in the working men's club, were they paying much attention?
Yeah, they were. As soon as I got into the ring, I think for a lot of them, it was the first time they'd seen a girl box. So, but yeah, I was a big fan of Prince Nazim at the time.
And that was Nazim Hamid, who had that wonderful sort of quick style.
Yeah, and I was in the ring, imitating some of his moves. Yeah, I just really, really enjoyed it.
You didn't somersault the ropes to get in like he used to, did you?
No.
Your list of titles is unprecedented then. What happens when you lose?
Doesn't happen often.
What will you do? How do you deal with it?
Well, I'll go back first and watch the replay with the coaches and then work on where I went wrong and where I could improve. Yeah, I'm not a happy person when I lose.
I should tell listeners that it's the first time since I've been speaking to you that you're suddenly not smiling. Even the thought of it.
Yes.
Tell me then, Nicola Adams, about your first piece of music. What is this and why have you chosen it?
The first piece of music is Drake, Summer 16. And this is because I've been listening to this song the whole year. It's got me motivated and I'm ready for action and for Rio.
Looking for revenge. All summer 16. Playing dirty, not clean. Out front for a season, looking like a damn football team. All in the same thing. All rapping one thing. Looking for revenge. To do what you couldn't do. Tell Obama that my verses are just like the whips at the end. They bulletproof. -20, we in Pittfield at K's Kitchen and a Canada Goose. Famous as but I'm still in the cut when they round up the truce. I'm just a sicko, a real sicko when you get to know me. I
That was Drake and Summer 16. And you say, Nicola, that was chosen because it, well, it sort of reminds you of how your year has been and focuses you in that place in Rio. You became the first British female boxer to retain an Olympic gold title. Did you go to Rio with the specific intention of claiming that record, or was it enough just to be there?
No, I was going there with that intention. I wanted to become a double Olympic champion. It's been my goal for the last 4 years. It's gold or nothing for me. I don't like coming second.
Of course, your first Olympics was London 2012, memorably. You nearly hadn't made it there. You fell down the stairs in 2009 and fractured your vertebrae. Never mind not box again. The doctors thought you might not walk again.
Yeah, it was really tough. It was hard to deal with. I was in bed for 3 months. Couldn't really do anything, couldn't walk about. I was stuck in bed pretty much the whole time. My family and friends kept our spirits up, really. They kept me motivated, and I'd go to the selection camps, which were on at the time for the GB selections, to go to the Olympics.
And just to remind people, of course, this was the first time ever that female boxing had been allowed into the Olympics. So this was a golden moment for your sport and potentially for you.
Yeah, and it was important to my recovery to make sure that everything was healed before I started training again. And I remember it was coming up to the last camp, and the coaches said, well, we can't put her onto the team unless we actually see her do anything, because the most I'd done so far was physio. And I remember the doctor saying, right, we need to be able to just get you to move just to show them that you can box. I mean, my achievements spoke for themselves, but I guess they just needed to see me
perform. What did they see you do? Did you get into the ring and spar?
I did a couple of rounds sparring, a couple of bags, and let me tell you, it was the hardest day I've ever had in my life. I remember that morning just setting off going to the gym, and I'd put on 3 morphine patches because I knew I was going to be in so much pain. It was going to be unreal. And literally after that day, like, I could not get out of bed for like a week and a half. I was in that much pain, but it was like, it was all worth it.
Let's just take a moment then and enjoy ourselves and look back at that golden time. It was London 2012. You had got to the finals. You were about to step into the ring with Ren Kankan of China. She looks like she's going to the gallows. You look like you're going for a big night out with your mates. I mean, the smile on your face was huge. How did you manage to be sort of so light of spirit, a smile on your face? What was it like from the inside?
I was just, I just always remember my coach telling me, growing up with boxing, saying, "You are, no matter how serious things get, you have to enjoy the moment. You have to enjoy what you're doing. If you enjoy what you're doing, you'll stay relaxed and you'll perform better." And I guess it was my first Olympics, home games as well. And I just wanted to enjoy every minute of it. And I really, really did. I was so happy, waving to the crowd. I stepped into the centre of the ring, and I just remember the bell going. And once we started to box, you couldn't block the noise out. When I won, they said it was equivalent to the same amount of noise as a jumbo jet taking off. So you can imagine how loud that was.
After that moment then, you were a gold medalist. What was life like in Leeds when you went home?
Yeah, it was very different. Walking down the street, I'd get stopped every 20 seconds. A normal trip to the corner store would take 20 minutes instead of 5. And I remember one particular day, I went to the supermarket thinking that I could just go and do my regular grocery shopping, and I was mobbed, had to leave my shopping and go home.
Did you?
Yeah.
How did you get out? Did anybody help you out?
Security had to help me out. I just thought, you know, I could just go in to my local supermarket, do my shopping, and everything will be fine, you know. It's okay.
Has it settled down? Can you do it now? Can you go shopping?
I can go, but I go at really odd times of the morning, like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. There's no one there, and I can happily shop or I do it online.
Let's have some more music, Nicola Adams. We're going to listen to your second.
This one's Nicki Minaj, Moment for Life. This is one of my workout tracks that I use. It's quite motivational for me and gets me fired up and ready to go in the ring.
And when you're listening to it today, is there a bit of a Pavlovian response where you think, oh, there it is?
Yeah. Ding, ding.
I fly with the stars in the skies. I am no longer trying to survive. I believe that life is a prize, but to live doesn't mean you're alive. Don't worry about me and who I fire. I get what I desire, it's my empire. And yes, I call the shots, I am the umpire. I sprinkle holy water upon the vampire. In this very moment, I'm king. In this very moment, I slay Goliath with the sling. This very moment, I bring, put it on everything. That I will retire with the ring, and I will retire with the crown. Yes, no, I'm not lucky, I'm blessed. Yes, clap for the heavyweight champ, me.
That was Moment for Life from Nicki Minaj. Nicola, the world of British sports should be forever grateful to your mum for not being able to find a childminder. You were 12 at the time. And tell me what happened on the day that you first saw a boxing club.
Oh, I absolutely loved it. I remember going into the gym and seeing everybody training. I was just blown away. The super heavyweights on the heavy bags, pounding away. It was like a real old school Rocky type gym with small square steamed up windows at the top of the room. I loved it.
It was a junior boxing club that was being run in that gym, and your mum had stuck you in there because
she was doing aerobics in the other part of the gym. What happened was the childminder cancelled, and they said that there's an after school boxing club at the same place. So she was like, oh, excellent. Took me to the gym, and then that was it. I loved it.
And you were already familiar with boxing. You'd watched tapes of legendary bouts with your father. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I used to sit down and watch Muhammad Ali, the reruns of him winning the Olympics, Sugar Ray Leonard winning the Olympics, and Ali going pro and seeing him boxing the Rumble of the Jungle, and just seeing his character outside of the ring as well. I absolutely loved his rhymes and the poems he did. I remember being mesmerised by the crowds and how pumped up everybody was, because I saw the build-up of everything before the interviews and Ali's trash-talking, and I just loved all that. At that time, I never thought that I was actually ever going to be a boxer. It was all by chance that I ended up in the gym.
In your home life, you and your brother, your mum and dad, were you competitive? Would you sit and play Monopoly till...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Monopoly, Frustration, Connect Four. Yeah, I still play all those games now, and I still have to win.
You do?
Yeah. With Connect Four as well, and I couldn't figure out how I was always losing. Because at the time I was only like five or six, so it was hard to win. I remember I used to say like, oh, can't you just let me win once? And my dad used to say no, because you won't appreciate the victory. So I had to get my victories on my own, and but it was right. You appreciate victory more when you actually earn it.
And when did you start to play chess?
I was 10.
What did you like about it?
Chess is a bit more tactical than Connect Four, but it's the same kind of thing. You're trying to make your opponent make a mistake, or you're trying to create a situation where your opponent has no other choice to make but to fall into your hands, and that's it. That's when you take over.
And then there's the jab.
Yeah, there's the jab.
Tell me about your third piece then. What are we going to hear this third tune?
We're going to hear Frank Sinatra, New York, New York. That's because up until I was 10 years old, we used to travel to New York every year. We used to go visit family, go to the theme parks, the walk parks and everything. And I really got into Frank Sinatra, and I heard this song on an advert once while I was there, and I absolutely loved it.
Start spreading the news, I'm leaving today. I want to be a part of it. New York, New York, these vagabond shoes are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York.
Frank Sinatra, New York, New York. And memories for you, Nicola Adams, of those regular family holidays that you used to take in America when you were a little girl. It was in your mid-teens that your mother became very ill indeed. She contracted meningitis. Tell me how that affected things at home for you.
Yeah, that was it was really tough. My mum was in hospital for a couple of months, which left me and my brother at home. And I had to pretty much do everything. I had to grow up quite quickly. I felt like I had to be the strong person.
And how was she taken ill? What happened?
She got sick, And at first we just thought, you know, it was just flu. She was in bed. And I thought, oh, she'll be all right. Went to school, came back, and she was still in bed. And that's unusual for my mum. And I just remember thinking to myself, no, there's just something not right. And so I phoned the ambulance and they took her to the hospital. And when she was at the hospital, they were asking her questions and her brain had already started to close down from the meningitis. And she couldn't remember her date of birth or how old she was. She said she had two daughters as well. I was like, wow, like she's really sick. And we didn't realize that, you know, she was dying, and that's why her brain was starting to close down, and that's why she couldn't remember everything. And luckily, we got her to the hospital in time, and they managed to save her life.
So very, very seriously ill then. How long was it before your mum was recovered and back home?
It was, I think it was 3 or 4 months before she was back.
And when she got back home, you know, she'd been through a lot. Were you then, of course, taking care of her as well as everything else?
Yeah, I was still taking care of my mum, even though she didn't like it very much. She wanted to be back up on her feet as quick as possible.
When you look back on that now, I mean, obviously, you know, you're a happy person. You've got a great life. You've been hugely successful. That's a huge amount of responsibility for a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, it was. It was really tough. I had to get my brother up, get him ready for school, and make sure I got to school on time and pick him up and have dinner and then take him to go see my mum at the hospital. My grandma used to come over as well and help out.
And where was your dad at this point?
He wasn't around.
So your mum and dad had broken up?
Yeah.
Did you see much of him?
No, not really. Still don't know, yeah.
It strikes me that a gym, a boxing gym, it's a very male environment. Tell me about being in a very male environment as a 13, 14-year-old girl. That's unusual.
To be honest, it wasn't something that I thought about. I just love being in the gym. And I guess it's because my coach said, when I first came to the gym, he said, There is no male and female in this gym. To me, you're all boxers, and I have one rule, you all listen to me. So I guess with that being said, I always felt like I was exactly the same as everybody else.
And you would have to be sparring with young guys, I imagine.
Yeah, I give a few of them a run for the money.
Good girl.
Yeah.
Time for your fourth then. Tell me about this. What are we going to hear?
My fourth song is Bob Marley, Jammin'. My mum always used to play a lot of Bob Marley in the kitchen when she was cooking, and this song particularly I liked the best. Ooh, yeah. Well, all right, we're jamming. I wanna jam it with you. We're jamming.
That was Bob Marley and Jam, and you said, Nicola, going into that one of the reasons you'd chosen it was because you remember that often your mum would put it on when she was cooking or whatever in the kitchen. I feel like I don't have a sense of how important your mum must have been, you know, that you do not build the sort of success you have, and especially as a one-parent family, by just kind of being in the background. I'm guessing she was always front and centre.
Oh, yeah, she loved the fact that I was doing something that I enjoyed doing, and she's always been my number one fan, the person that's worked the hardest in the background, I guess, taking me to the gym and taking me to training camps and trying to raise the funds so I can go away to box abroad in competitions, because at the time women's boxing didn't have a structure, no training camps, and we didn't get any help neither. So she worked really, really hard, and sometimes it was a case of you can have either the new pair of trainers or you can go to this training camp, and I had to make my choices.
I want to talk a little bit about that environment, you know, as a young sportswoman. To what extent, as you went to boxing camps, as you went to various gyms, did you feel that your best interests were always, you know, the most important thing to the people that you were working with at that young age?
My coaches always gave me full support, but there were some coaches that weren't as supportive for women's boxing. They'd be like, you know, women shouldn't box. I'd never let a woman train in my gym.
Did people say that to you?
Yeah.
And you would say what?
I'd just be like, oh, okay. I was like, I'll show you. Wait until you see me box. And it was quite satisfying to see somebody that just said that, see you box, and then say, wow, you could actually show the boys in my gym a thing or two. And for them then to say, you know what, I'm actually going to start training girls at my gym. So it's like when you go from that extreme to the other, I just used to love proving them wrong.
Right, it's time for some more music now, Nicola Adams. We're on your fifth.
Yeah, this is Linkin Park, In the End. This is because when I was growing up with boxing, it was quite tough to deal with the criticism that women's boxing got, and this song kind of got me through it. I was like, yeah, it made me really, really motivated and just got me out there training.
All I know, time is a valuable thing. Watch it fly by as the pendulum swings. Watch it count down to the end of the day. The clock takes life away. It's so unreal. Didn't look out below. Watch the time go right out the window. Trying to hold on, didn't even know. I wasted it all just to watch you go. I kept everything inside, and even though I tried, it all fell apart. What it meant to be will eventually be a memory of a time I tried so hard.
That was Linkin Park and In the End. So, Nicola Adams, in 2012, you topped the Independent newspaper's pink list of the most powerful LGBT people in public life. Was being bisexual ever an issue for you or for those around you?
No, it's never been a problem for me, to be honest.
You'll be aware there are still very, very few openly gay, I don't know if there are any gay male boxers that are out. There's certainly very few footballers, hardly any rugby stars that are currently playing. Do you think that reluctance from within professional sport, do you think it comes from a sort of commercial imperative, or do you think it comes from a kind of cultural thing that people are scared within the culture of their sport?
Yeah, I think for some people it is hard to be able to be themselves and to come out. Some people are just happy keeping their private life private, I guess. But I'm not the type of person that could live in fear. You know, this is who I am. You know, you either like me or you don't, I guess.
Earlier this year then, you were among several UK athletes who had their, you know what I'm going to say, you know, you had your medical records leaked, your confidential files by hackers. It's believed that probably they were located in Russia. There is no suggestion that you did anything wrong at all. But how do you feel about that? You know, there are big questions right now among us, the sports fans, about what we can trust, about the fact that actually all we're seeing are brilliant people who have trained to the limits of their ability that are unaided. How can you reassure sports fans that that is indeed what they're seeing all the time?
I guess you've just got to, I mean, I used to have a TUE for having asthma, and so you need that for your asthma pump. And, you know, I can't compete without my inhaler, just in case I ever have an asthma attack. And I think maybe we could make all the files on what are public or whichever makes people happiest. But I guess what everybody doesn't understand is that the athletes have gone through the proper protocols to get the sanction for, you know, whatever they need to use the drug for. So it's completely, you know, within their rights.
So you think actually that rather than people saying, well, you need to respect my privacy and how dare you look at my files, it should actually be the case that they are...
Yeah, it shouldn't have been done that way, but definitely.
But you think maybe the way forward might be for athletes to publish their medical files?
Just make it public, then, you know, it doesn't seem like you're hiding anything.
Hugh McIlvany, the great sports writer, has said there is no denying that boxing is, in the end, the most dramatic of all the activities that are classed as sport. There are people who think it's barbaric. There are people who think it should be banned. What do you say to them?
For me, boxing it's a work of art. I love the technical ability that goes into it. It's not as barbaric as you think. There's so much in there. You can't just lose all your senses and throw caution to the wind and just start throwing punches, because, you know, you'll get caught, you'll get hit, possibly knocked out, and you've got to be so smart and tactical when you're in there.
How do you feel when you do hurt somebody, really hurt somebody,
when I
feel like I feel sad because I don't want to hurt anybody when I'm in there. I just want to win.
Let's have some more music, Nicola Adams. We are on your sixth. Tell me about this.
This is Chainsmokers, and I chose this one because this was the song at the time when I met my partner that I'm with now, and it always reminds me of her.
Take it slow, but it's not typical. He already knows that my love is fire. His heart was a stone.
That was Chainsmokers and Roses. You said, Nicola Adams, that was chosen for your partner. You're in your mid-30s now. How do you imagine your romantic future, but your home life? What would you hope for yourself?
I definitely hope one day I'll have some kids, maybe get married. You know, the happy ending to go with my other happy endings.
Yeah, there's a very big smile on your face when you say that. Well, I'm glad to hear it. You have achieved... I mean, I was going to say you've achieved everything there is to achieve in your sport. Actually, you've done that sort of twice over. There must surely be the great question of whether or not you turn professional and you take all those skills to actually go and make some serious money. Is that something you're thinking about?
Yeah, it's definitely one of my thoughts that I'm thinking about, as well as TV presenting and acting as well, and Tokyo. It's a lot to think about. I love the fact that if I go into professional boxing, I'll be taking up a whole new set of challenges, which I love a challenge, and I'll be breaking down barriers, breaking down walls again, which does excite me a lot. And I know there's a huge potential in the professional game. It's just waiting for a big name to step in there and open up the doors.
So in female boxing, of course, that has so far gone untapped. You know, we haven't seen a woman's marquee headlining name in Vegas yet. How long do you think it will be before we do, for a big fight night to be topped in the bill by two female fighters?
Oh, I don't think, to be honest, we're that far away. Maybe a couple of years, we could be seeing a woman headlining in Vegas.
Could you be that woman?
I most probably could be.
Well, you know, I had planned to ask you then about there is a transference in some areas of your sport to mixed martial arts, MMA, which is now a huge area of growth. There's a lot of money being made. You're not thinking about that then. You're thinking about sticking with boxing, are you?
Yeah, I'm going to stick with boxing. I have been asked, and, you know, I've fought by, but I think for me, it's boxing for me.
You've mentioned actually acting too, and as we know, just to make ends meet and to pay for your training camps, many years ago you were an extra in Coronation Street in Emmerdale, and more recently you played yourself in Waterloo Road. You seem somebody who you like centre stage, you like that sort of thing. Are you looking at bigger acting parts, more of it?
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to do some bigger acting parts. Maybe a movie role would be quite cool. Female James Bond, you know.
It's time, surely.
Yeah, definitely. It's time. It's time.
We're going to hear some more music, Nicola Adams. Tell me then about the next one. This is your seventh and very much a change of pace.
And this is the Nutcracker Suite. I chose this because I absolutely loved to watch the film Fantasia when I was a kid, the Disney film. And it actually got me into listening to classical music.
When do you listen to this then? Because I'm sure it's not when you're doing the sort of bags and stuff or when you're on a run.
Yeah, I like to listen to it when I'm driving down to and from London to Leeds. It's very calming on the motorway. It keeps me calm when people don't like to use their indicators when they're switching lanes.
Thank you.
That was the Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy from Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite, played by the New York City Ballet Orchestra, conducted by David Zinman. You said that you'd chosen that, Nicola Adams, because you like calming music when you're driving, when you're doing all those journeys between Leeds and London. And you were recently in Leeds to unveil this. There's an engraved paving stone now in your hometown, which says, it's engraved with the words, "Tell me I can't, and that's why I will." Tell me more about that.
Yeah, it was a nice touch from the MOBO Awards to give me that award. And I guess it's because I am paving a way for the next generation. I know that now younger girls like me that start boxing, there's a path for them to follow, and they won't have to struggle, they won't have to worry about funding. They know I start here, I go to the national championships, I box for England, box for Team GB, and then I hopefully become an Olympic champion one day.
You're used to tough times, and we know as a 14-year-old you coped at home on your own looking after your brother. We know the financial straits you were in when you were a young boxer trying to make ends meet. I am sending you to a desert island. Are you a very practical person? Will you be able to cook for yourself, fend for yourself, build a shelter?
Yeah, I'd be able to do that. Yeah, I love all that, actually.
Would you?
Yeah, yeah, I like the thought of having to fend for myself and cook and make myself a little den.
Just as well. Tell me about your eighth piece of music then. What are we going to go out on today?
My eighth piece of music is Entrance, Set You Free. I chose this one because this was the first time when I was young, me and my friends, we managed to wangle our way into a nightclub. Underage, we managed to get in, and we were on the dance floor, and this song came on, and yeah, I'll remember that moment for the rest of my life.
And I can tell by the way you're in the ring, I bet you're a great dancer, are you?
I'm not bad.
That was Entrance and Set You Free. Memories, Nicola, you say, of your underage clubbing. But you told me during that you were actually 17, you just weren't 21, so it wasn't too outrageous. I'm going to give you the books now. You get the Bible and the complete works of Shakespeare, and you get to take another book along too. What's your book going to be?
Yeah, it would be The History of Almost Everything by Bill Bryson.
Ah, yeah. Okay, we're going to give you that then. And you are allowed, every castaway is allowed a luxury. What's your luxury going to be?
My luxury item would be a games console.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many hours a week do you spend doing that?
I'd say I probably do maybe 16 hours, maybe more. It's definitely a downtime thing when I'm not in training. I can put on the console and I can play online as well, and my brother plays, so we can play the same game. I can communicate as well and talk about how the week's going.
I have to warn you, you won't be able to do that. You won't be able to communicate with anybody. We will give you a games console that is not connected to the internet. You can have that as your luxury. If you had to save just one of these eight discs from the Waves, which one would it be?
It would be Chainsmokers. Roses.
The romantic one. It's yours. Nicola Adams, thank you very much for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a download from the BBC. You'll find more information on the Radio 4 website, bbc.co.uk/radio4.
This is the BBC.